devil hard.
Really?
Yeah, no. I don't like
it either. You are on? We're on? All right, we'll go in the middle. Good morning. This is Commissioner Brian Kalk. We're meeting on the 12th floor of the Capitol today. It's January 20th, 2013 for the administration. January 30th of 2013, we're meeting for the administrative portion of our meeting. I'm joined by my colleagues, Commissioner Crisman and Commissioner Fedorchuk. I don't have any comments to Randy or Julie.
Mr. Chairman, at this time, I do not have any comments either.
I don't have any comments either.
Okay, great. We have one item on consent, so I would move passage of the consent items.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, I have a question for Mr. Diller, actually, on the consent item. So it's yourself and Jerry now have been appointed as advocacy staff for this rate case. And you're in the process of going through to get a consultant, correct?
That's correct.
And then I was thinking more about some of the discussion, not so much that we'd had, about previous rate cases to where we go and we have an attorney dedicated. I asked Alana this morning to kind of give a cost estimate of an attorney, but I'd like us, if you think we could do that, I think that's something we should look at. But how does that lay out? I mean, is that your decision or is that something you as the lead for advocacy staff?
Well, I guess it would be my decision. I can tell you what I'm thinking there.
Okay.
In the last rate case, XL rate case, we had two cases filed simultaneously, so we had $250,000 to work with. In this case, we just have one test year. We have $125,000 to work with. In the last case, I spent $180,000 on the consultants and about $10,000 or $11,000 on Mitch Armstrong, who more or less was.
How much did you spend on Mitch? You said
$10,000 or $11,000. Okay. But I mean, Mark Grumman did for the most part did all the work. He was just
right, absolutely,
a little bit along for the ride. But I'm not saying he didn't add something to it. I'm just saying Mark was the lead attorney. My point in giving you those numbers is I think that I would be better served to spend my money on consultants to investigate the Ray case and make do with the attorney that presumably we'll have on board here. And
that was where I was going with this. The discussion is that if the thought process was that we're in the process of interviewing attorneys, get someone on board, then they become chart of advocacy staff. As we get closer to the hearings in August, September, that makes good sense. If we didn't, we needed to go back and get some money to get an attorney.
I just don't think in this case we have the money to hire an outside attorney. That's part of the reason why we've asked for an increase in funding.
Absolutely.
Before the legislature. So,
when if the the bill that we have in to raise the filing fee, does it raise it to what, 175?
That's right.
But that still would not become retroactive in this case whatsoever.
Nope.
So you have the ability to assess a higher fee with the approval of the Emergency Commission.
Right.
So if you determine 125 is not enough, you could go ask for an additional 125 if you needed a higher fee.
Okay. Well, that was, Julie, this is definitely your portfolio, but I wanted to start the discussion that if we get to a point where advocacy staff needs more resources, I would certainly like them to approach us quickly, and then we'll do whatever we need to do to get those resources, because we want you to be able to do whatever you have to do in this case.
We've never exercised that right. Josh is right. We've had that right, but we've never exercised that before. In my mind, we can make do this time with I'll be able to tell you sooner. I mean, when we get the RFP, well, RFP is actually out. once we get some feedback from the consultants, whether or not we have enough money or not. If nobody applies for the work, I guess that'll be a clear signal.
Okay. All right.
And as a matter of process, can we go to the Emergency Commission at any point? Do we need to do that on the front end? Do we need to, and when can we ask for more money and a larger fee?
I think we only have one more meeting. I believe that's in June.
Make sure you guys grab a mic if you're off, though.
I believe we only have one more meeting in June.
right now, I think we'd have to go in front of the legislature if we wanted it right now. Is that, Commissioner Christman would know that better than me.
That sounds right to me. I don't know if there's an exception to it, but I think you're right.
I guess I think the June time frame probably works. Mike does the work he's got to do, and we get a better picture where we're at come May. And if you come back in May and say, hey, listen, I think we're going to need some more assets, then we entertain that for the June Emergency Commission meeting. I just don't want us to get to a point where we don't have the resources for you to do what you have to do.
There is a – we have to be on the calendar in advance of the June
winter. Okay, yes. So, Josh, if you can get that date.
Is it a, I can't remember if it's a couple of weeks or a month. Or
I think it might be about a month. We might have to know by May sometime. But I will get a notification from the Secretary of State, and I will let everybody know.
Okay.
The difference in levels of expertise, the lawyers that we're looking at to attempt to hire are quite vast. And so
sure.
I guess, you know, after we know who we're going to get as an attorney, we'll be in a better position to make this
absolutely
determination.
You know? And then just for my colleagues, I mean, our folks, Pat will be on our side, if you will, and the Alon will be our general counsel. So any legal questions that we have, it's not our legal support that's in question. It's making sure they have the legal support they need, because you can't cross-pollinate discussion once. Well, actually, based on today, you're officially assigned to advocacy staff, so the divide is taking place.
And Jerry.
Okay.
So procedurally, for example, who are the consultants that you hire? Are they like Bailey or accounting firms, or who does this kind of work?
Yeah, a long time ago we had a gentleman out of the University of North Dakota that was doing our work for us. He's passed away a long time ago, actually. Since then, we've not had an in-state firm helping with rate cases. I've done a little bit of work trying to encourage at least one person out there to submit a bid. And I shouldn't say that. We've had a few looks to be a man and wife firm in Mandan. I can't think of their name right off the top of my head. But in any event, most of the consulting firms have come from the East. We had one when the MDU case from Oklahoma. But most of them come from the Eastern Seaboard.
And this is part of their whole business plan, that they work on these kinds of cases around the country.
Right, yeah. These consultants, some of the consultants we hire have been in, you know, half the states.
Interesting.
But it goes back to the staffing dilemma of, you know, your counterparts in other states might have 6-8 people dedicated to this, where we have one public utilities analyst, and Mike is where it's staffed out there. So we have to rely on these consultants to do the detailed work. So it's just this give and take back and forth where the filing fees become the way we do business. So, you know, maybe we'll have to look at it. I already think towards the next session, maybe this wasn't enough we asked for this time.
Hiring consultants is an expensive business, but I think in the long run it makes economical sense.
Absolutely.
Because you can employ them when you need them, and then when you don't, they're gone, and you don't carry an FTE for the next 40 years. I think it makes sense. I don't like spending that kind of money, but I think it makes sense in the long term.
Okay. Julie, do you have anything else?
I don't.
Okay. Right. Thank you, Mike. I guess we'll go right into discussion matters with the commission. Mr. Sheldon, you have down 2012 siting report.
Correct. I worked with Julie and Pat on this, just kind of getting some information together.
When you say this, you're referring to?
The press release you should have in front of you.
Ah, okay.
Scott, just if I might back up just a tiny bit, I had asked that we add this to admin in an effort to, A, have us look at this data, because I think it's pretty helpful and interesting and informative, walk through what happened in 2012 and maybe get a sense of what we might be seeing in 2013. And then in the process, this obviously is pretty interesting data for the public. So Scott and I developed this news release that would attempt to share with the public how much was cited in 2012 in terms of dollar value and in which portfolio areas. So that's kind of the purpose of the discussion.
No, it makes sense because we do that with our annual grain elevator statistics and we do it with telephone statistics. So if we did it with energy-related infrastructure, that makes sense too.
So I thought maybe we could just walk through the actual database, and then the news release we can maybe handle offline. You guys can work through it, or we can discuss it here in terms of what we want to include.
Are you proposing we go through all 20 pages of this?
No, but maybe Pat offered to sort of give us a highlight of what is to come. And then I'd like to get a little bit more insights into the projects that are on the books that haven't happened, how we, especially in the area of wind, are these realistic that we might be seeing these again? You know, what have we heard from these companies that, you know, applied in 08 and they're still on our listing?
Well, maybe, Pat, kind of walk my colleagues through the discussion you and I had probably a month ago about the process of they file the letter of intent, and we typically, once they file the letter of intent, you know, we don't go back and pester them too much until they'd make some movement. You know, if you could walk them through the same thing you and I talked about when we had the wind discussion.
Well, I'm not sure I will be along the same track as that other discussion, but
okay.
But when we get a filing, we get the letter of intent is the first thing that comes in. And then, you know, they may ask for a shortened period between the filing of a letter of intent and the filing of an application. But we wait for the application. We don't, you know, we aren't out there encouraging them to file that at any particular point. And so some of the items on this list you'll see are quite old when you look at the letter of intent, the date the letter of intent was filed, and we still don't have an application on some of them.
But the letter of intent doesn't, like, expire like a siting certificate, does it?
No.
Okay.
No. It's just initial information about the project, the cost of the project, and when they think they want to build and get their certificates from us.
And that was why I think it's a great idea to keep track of it in the sheet. And I think we developed this a couple years ago. Kara started taking the lead and putting it all together with your guys' help. But I get a little bit concerned, worried too much about, not worried, but focusing on projects that might come in. We stay with the pending projects. So I think it's great to take a snapshot of what we did the past year. But going forward, it's good to get an idea of workflow. But that really comes down to the schedule, like what we've got in the next 90 days. So were you thinking about just going through just as an update or trying to address it in the press release?
Just getting a sense for what's out there.
Yep, that makes perfect
sense. And we can choose to or not include it in the press release.
Okay.
It looks to me like there's 9 pipeline letters of intent that came in like 2012. So I would assume that those are probably pretty fresh and we will be more than likely seeing those moving forward here.
Pat, maybe jump in, though, when Julie points out the good point. You get the letter of intent, and that's in one column. We acknowledge the letter of intent. It's not until we actually deem the application complete. So if we're looking at what's coming, once we look at the column that the application is deemed complete, is that where the best point we know that there's going to be a hearing coming?
Yes. That when we deem the application complete, that's when we issue the notice of hearing.
Right. So as you look through this spreadsheet, that kind of is the ticker.
Do you get any sense from the companies, Pat, or is it just all of a sudden one day it shows up and we've got the application and then we move from there? The latter.
Okay. We'll get a sense.
Sometimes they're very close to what they had anticipated. Like if they ask for 2 weeks, if they ask for us to reduce the one-year waiting period down to 2 weeks, we're pretty sure that they're going to be filing soon.
And is this amount, like this, you know, 9 or 10 of these pipelines, is that normal or is that a lot?
Well, it's certainly
compared
more than
previous years.
Than in, history, historically. The last 5 years, I guess, we've been gradually getting more and more cases, more cited cases. I think Josh had some numbers on that in for the testimony.
Right.
Right.
The legislature.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to equate, and I think for me this has been a really good document, but it's hard to equate sometimes, like an Enbridge 300-mile pipeline will look the same as an Enbridge 1-mile pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
And so this gives us a good ballpark, but the time commitments are hard to gauge sometimes.
Yes.
And most of these...
And the amount of investment will help you determine how much time a case might take.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on if it does. It is a pretty good indicator. A large investment will take a little bit longer than a short line with a lower investment.
Wouldn't you say that it's fair to assume that the production tax credit being extended will probably mean that some of the wind farms that we have letters of intent on that are stalled or not moved forward, we'll probably see some movement on those. I mean, that's what I figure is a fair guess. Mm-hmm. So we'll see some wind farms this year. I think we're going to continue to see the 45 megawatt gas.
Some of them are pretty large projects, and so
yeah,
it may be more than just the production tax credit. It may be a little more.
They can't find a buyer.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, so do we want to talk about moving forward? You're not comfortable including in any news release what we're seeing as kind of projecting
forward. I think this is great. Just talk about what we did, and we anticipate great things in the future. But I like your idea, though, of going through and kind of giving a feel for what's going on. And I think that's a good idea, because this has always been a good document. That's where I said Kevin and Tony and I had always, they'd been here a long time. They had a really good feel for it. I came in. It took me a long time to kind of get up to speed on some of this, to get a feel for what this meant. But we could easily have a session and go through that. We could take an hour and go through all these cases. There wouldn't be a downside to that other than just it takes us time.
Right.
To give, because when I go through this, I can get a sense of what all these cases are because I've been living them for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that'd be a helpful discussion, and I don't think it would take any prep work. It's just the time to do it.
Right.
So.
Okay.
Should we do that? I mean, do we want to schedule that? That'd be fine by me.
Up to you, Randy. I can do that on my own with Pat, or we can do it if you're interested in doing it together. I'm happy to do that too.
I think it would be useful.
Okay. So we'll add that to scheduling.
Okay. But no, as far as this, Julie, I think whatever we come up with is fine. I just don't want to be... I think we could say we have numerous letters of intent for general projects.
Yep.
And then do that update at the end of the next year.
Yeah, we'll take out the specifics for 2013 then.
Because when I look back...
Otherwise, it should be pretty straightforward.
Because when we look at consistency for our press releases, we do grain elevators looking back. We do telephones looking back. But we do look at trends, though. Like for telephones, we'll do what 2012 was, what 11 was 10 was 9 was. So the press release, you could broaden it going back a little bit to see the trend lines that are coming.
We could include some.
I'm thinking of that.
Used in the testimony.
Yeah, because I'm thinking the telephone ones, it's been interesting to watch that over the last, 6-8 years, the number of cell phones and landlines has just completely flipped. And so you can see the trends going that way. Okay. Fair enough. So you want to get this out ASAP, correct?
Yeah.
Fair enough. Scott, we have it by 1 o'clock today? So you need comments from myself and Commissioner Chrisman? And
just a little, I think, a tweak here and there to get some things out.
Okay.
And then should be ready to go.
Perfect. Great. All right. WBI transmission line third-party damage. I put it down. Just ask Pat to give all three of us an update what you know about the MDU. I shouldn't say MDU. The two WBI incidents, one up by Watford City, Williston area, and the one by Taylor.
Oh. Well, I sent emails to the commissioners about everything that I know.
Yep.
Except for some things that haven't been confirmed.
Okay, maybe. So nothing has changed.
Nothing has changed. And I didn't know. I thought maybe the reason you wanted it on here was to discuss whether the commission is actually going to pursue a complaint.
Well, and that was maybe just walk us all through the process now of what how a complaint would come and that, because that's a little confusing sometimes.
Well, if it comes from us, we've had one example of a complaint filed by the commission on a third-party damage case, and that was that Avinia case.
So if that happens...
Okay. So the staff would file a complaint. After doing a little bit of investigation.
Basically, Aaron goes out and does the investigation. He feels something's wrong.
Right. And then we would make allegations as to the violations, of the potential violations, and then it would come before the... I think we would serve that then to the company. Of course, we would do that. And then we wait for a response. And then based on the response, the commission could make a decision, or we could maybe even go with a consent order with the company and that the commission could consider at a meeting. Or if none of that actually worked out, then the commission could set a hearing for the complaint.
Okay. So that's one route.
Was there a violation of one call in this?
That's what we would determine after the investigation.
But there's, Julie's question, though, is it's there could be a lot of different violations. It could be a violation of one call. It could be a violation of their operating procedures. So there's different rules there, too, correct?
So this is an interstate natural gas pipeline. If there were pipeline safety violations, that would not be our jurisdiction. It's only the damage prevention law the one call law that we mm-hmm. would be.
On these particular pipelines?
Yes.
But if, like, if the city of Granville had problems, it could be operations or one call.
Correct.
So it's very – I get confused in a hurry sometimes on this.
Is it up to us to decide if somebody's going to figure out whether this was a one call violation or not?
If the commission wants the staff to pursue it, we will do the investigation anyway. But the question is whether the commission wants the staff to actually pursue a complaint if there is a one call violation.
I'll give you an example that in the past, I've never been too concerned about the potential one call things in a city where nobody's hurt and all this. But we had one, if somebody was killed, the company did not want to issue a violation. They didn't want to file a complaint. The company went, I'm like, this is crazy. We need to go do this. So we sent someone out there and we initiated our own investigation on it. So there's some level in there where any of the commissioners can say, I'd like staff to do this. It doesn't take a majority, just one of us.
We haven't been treating it as a proactive program.
Proactive in awareness.
Proactive awareness, but not necessarily proactive as far as finding violations, trying to find violations.
Except in the case of the loss of life.
Because most of the time when we get a complaint filed, it's by a company that had a facility that was damaged by a contractor. And we have a lot of those that come in. I mean, we have a fair amount that come in. We have some pending right now, too. But at some point, somebody might say that the commission should have pursued that. And that's where the commission has to kind of draw that line for the staff, I think.
Two questions. Why would a pipeline owner not pursue a complaint when their facilities are damaged, other than about the only two reasons that occur to me would be they didn't mark it right, so it was their fault, or that it was, a landowner or something that did cause the damage, and they know if they complain about it, it's just going to be all the harder to get easements the next time they're doing something. But are there other reasons that they wouldn't want to do that?
Every time we go to a one-call board meeting, or any time we meet with Williston Basin Interstate, for example, WBI, we ask them that question. And, the responses we receive aren't direct on point, I don't think. One of the things that they say is that, well, we are litigating payment for the damages. That's the major thing that we've heard, that they're litigating the payment for damages. And so I don't know if that's the only reason.
Yeah. Then my other question is, with these two incidents now, I mean, some people were put out of gas for a while and had, if not damages, at least price significant inconvenience. And so short of an investigation, are we going to get some kind of a report from the pipeline company or from our pipeline inspector or anybody that gives us at least just a story on what happened that we feel pretty comfortable, you know, who did it, was there a one-call request, was it marked, those kinds of things.
We did get a letter from WBI on the first incident, and I think I forwarded that to the commissioner.
I've seen that one.
Now, when I thought about that after the fact, after I forwarded it to you, I thought, I wonder if this constitutes a complaint or not. It seemed to me it was more like information when I, at first blush. But in WBI's mind, I wonder if they're saying, here's the information, commission, decide what you want to do with it. I don't know if that's what they're saying or not, but they did provide something on that first one.
Well, in getting permitted in the first place, is there some kind of a requirement that they report, do some kind of a report that is you know, required to be factual and complete by law or something like that, so that we at least get someone's story and it's not just some gossip that we heard around the streets in the neighborhood or something like that of what happened?
Well, the one-call damage prevention or the one-call law in North Dakota does not require that kind of a report.
But we started about, I don't know if it was 2 years ago or 3 years ago, we started putting in our orders and we approve a pipeline. We'll put in the order that says, if your facility is hit, you have to notify the commission. So in the pipelines that we've cited in the last couple of years, we put a little sentence in there that says, directs them, if their infrastructure is hit, they have to notify us. So
now, if you're talking about this particular incident with the WBI, well, let's talk about the first WBI incident. First of all, that line is not cited by the commission.
So that even WBI, makes it more confusing to follow. Because
the WBI is an interstate natural gas pipeline, and we don't cite those. So there's nothing in any orders that we would have that would say they should have reported that. There is a requirement from pipeline safety standpoint. It's a requirement at the federal level because, again, this kind of a line is not jurisdictional to us for pipeline safety. But there is a requirement to report certain incidents. And I believe that these two qualified. We found out that they did report the second one. I haven't seen the report on the first one yet. We got a message from the central region of PHMSA asking us for more information. So if an investigation is to be done from the pipeline safety viewpoint, it would be done by PHMSA.
But then make clear again that pipeline safety is not one call.
Correct.
That to me gets, I always got to focus on that because that's a whole different.
Even though they help us pay for, the federal grant that we get includes dollars that we spend doing damage prevention work on pipeline. They'll cover that. Our state damage prevention program, or our one call law, covers everything in the state, underground facilities, and that would include interstate pipelines. That's why we could do an investigation on the damage on the one call portion.
But the best way I keep it straight in my head, for a one call violation, there's nothing in the state that we cannot pursue a one call violation on, whether it's a pipeline, a power line, a telephone line, anything.
Water line.
But then for pipeline safety, it's only the jurisdictional lines.
Right.
Remind me again, which are the jurisdictional lines that we cover for pipeline safety?
For pipeline safety, we have a program for intrastate natural gas pipelines.
Okay.
That's it.
So to kind of summarize these issues, we could pursue an investigation if we wanted to under one call, but we've typically let the companies decide if they want to pursue an investigation and let them handle it first, and then if they file a complaint with us, then we pursue it.
Right. We don't pursue it
over one
whether
call.
The company does an investigation on the incident or not, we don't know. But we do generally wait for a complaint.
Okay.
From a company if there's a one call issue, and then we follow up after that. Except in one situation where we did issue a staff complaint, and that was on a WBI line hit.
But even in that case, we waited. We waited a little bit to see what WBI would do because we'd hoped that they, I had hoped that they would come forward with the file a complaint and then we could act on it. Mm-hmm. Because once you start going out and what's your criteria? Right. And so for that one, for me, it was very easy. There was a loss of life. That's a, if there's a loss of life and a company doesn't issue a complaint against somebody, then I think we have to direct staff that way. Mm-hmm. This one, quite honestly, to get back to this particular one, I'm still waiting to see what the companies file. Because if the companies don't file it, I think we should perhaps look at staff investigation because this is a pretty big deal on this particular one. Because this is kind of like that middle ground. I don't think we've seen one to this big since I've been here other than when the guy was killed. Can you recall, Pat, anything that's been this significant? These are two pretty big hits.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you're going to make one call worthwhile, people have to think there's some sort of enforcement of it.
Absolutely. And so you give the company some period of time to file their own complaint against the third-party excavator, and if they don't, then we could direct staff. But then the staff need our direction. If Aaron just wants to investigate it, he doesn't have to have us. He can just go do it, can he? Or does he have to have your direction to go do that?
He can, he can do the investigation whether there are any one call violations. We can do that work. But the direction that we're looking for is whether the commission wants us to pursue a staff complaint if we don't get anything from the company.
My thoughts at this time would be yes, but the time frame I don't know would be subject to.
And I would say wait until we see what the company does.
Right. But if we're 90 days from now, the company still hasn't done anything, then I think we'd want staff to go look at it.
Mm-hmm. And what we can do is we can do the investigation to determine if there's even a potential for a staff complaint and let you know.
Yeah. And then we have, about 14 of them that have come through here where usually what ends up happening is staff goes out there and looks at it, and it's like Pat said, it's pretty easy to prove or disprove. And they come back, they'll make a recommendation. And oftentimes their recommendation has been they've got a consent decree with the third party that didn't do the call, and there's some amount of dollars assigned to the fine. It comes in front of the commission, we make a decision and go forward. So
there's one call potential violation that the commission hasn't had to handle yet, and that's coming. That is.
Thanks, Pat.
Everything was done properly, but they still hit it. There's one section in the one call law that talks about due care. We haven't had to decide one of those yet. So that's coming, though.
What generally is due care?
Yes. Yeah. If it's been marked and it depends on the situation, sure. And I think we will handle those on a case-by-case basis. But they're coming.
Okay. This is sort of close, but I thought where you were going with this is if all the cases that I ever heard of from the outside were people didn't follow the one call rules, was that the contractor didn't call in or ignored the marks or something like that and tore something up. But is the penalty the same for the owner of the underground facility if they either don't mark it or don't mark it where it really is, and the contractor comes in and has done everything right but hits something, then the contractor is going to get shut down because there's an emergency now, so people have to come in. Potentially the contractor's people could have gotten hurt or killed. So is the owner of the facility fined then?
I believe that there is potential for a one-call violation when a company doesn't mark a line. We haven't had a case like that. The penalty provisions are the same for all one-call violations, and that is a maximum of $5,000 under our general provisions. So
Bill Hagelin downstairs.
We haven't determined in any situation yet what the penalty amount should be for a non-marking situation.
Has there been that hearing on that, Bill?
I don't think the damage prevention one there has been. The hearing on that one, Julie and I were down for that one. But for the one call, I don't think that hearing has come forward yet. But as an update, though, the commission, up until 3 years ago, we'd never been involved in a damage, in a one-call hearing, if you will.
Right.
It was the first time ever. Mm-hmm. So it was all uncharted ground, and now we're kind of making sure we develop a matrix of how we do things, and this is all good discussion because I don't think these will end. But it's trying to figure out where do you inject that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But the federal guideline is dollar amounts. And so in the back of my mind, loss of life, absolutely. But then dollar amount, what is it, $50,000 is the federal one for a investigation?
For violation.
For violation. So I think kind of to our matrix we would do is some type of dollar amount as well or impact. I mean,
impact, yeah.
You know, you look at if the whole town of Williston is out of power, that's impact.
Mm-hmm.
If the whole town of Taylor is out of power, that's impact too. Maybe not as big, but it's still so some type of layering like that is what we'll probably get to. But it gets
and
slippery.
And time, too. You
sure.
Know, if it's out for an hour versus 24 hours, or you know, there's that.
But it does get slippery when we're giving guidance for the person to go do the investigation, and then we're the ones that are going to hear the complaint. Because if you made up your mind before you already asked them to do the investigation, hopefully we haven't, because that's the point of the investigation.
No, I don't think you've made up your mind yet.
All right, because as long as we're clear about that.
You don't know what the violation is yet?
Yeah.
You have no idea. And so all we're going to say is there's potential for a violation here from staff's investigation. Do you want us to pursue it, or do you want us to wait for a company, continue to wait for the company to file something?
Right. Okay. Anything else in that, Julie or Randy?
So are we deciding that today and providing direction, or we just...
No, we can wait. On that.
I think what I heard, I thought I heard direction was give them some period of time, and if they don't do it, staff should file the work on a investigation.
We'll do the work on the investigation, and we'll wait for the company.
Yeah, so that's what you're doing.
Time.
You're going to do the investigation. We're going to give the company 90 days, and then we'll reconsider.
Aaron will be back at the end of this. He'll be back next week on the job.
How about the one up in Minot? Where's that one at while we're on pipelines?
That...
Aaron was investigating that, too.
Yeah, the last thing I saw on that was a request from PHMSA for information about the damages, because I think that the Montana Dakota Utilities may retract the report.
Okay.
They're considering that because the damage was not caused by the gas pipeline incident. The damage was caused by the vehicle.
That hit the house.
It hit the house, yeah. And so they're deciding whether they... That they think that's an official, you know, officially an incident to be reported, or that whether they want to retract that report.
When is Leonard supposed to come back up here, Steiner, to see us?
I believe he's coming in April.
Could you ask him if he's got some extra time to spend with all three of us as a group or individually and just do his PHMSA 101?
Sure.
I think that would be helpful. He spent some time.
He'd be happy to.
Yeah, he's a good guy. Okay. All right. Going once, going twice? All right. Commissioner Fedorchuk, response to legislative questions.
This is the IT issue and Representative Striley's questions that he had. And Steve has some draft comments or draft responses that I actually printed it, but I didn't get the page that I wanted the most. So do you have copies for all of us, Steve?
I don't, but I can make copies.
Okay.
All right.
And then do we want to decide now? How do we want to proceed in getting this wrapped up and the responses out?
Yep, I think that's exactly that. We'll finish this up with the IT stuff, Randy's weights and measures stuff. And I talked to Roscoe in the hallway yesterday, and he was busy today and yesterday and today, but he's happy to meet with us as a group individually, so we'll have to figure out the best way to do that.
Is that a subcommittee kind of thing, or is he the person that we meet with, or is there more than him?
Well, you might know better than me, but I got the sense that he's pretty much is the subcommittee. Okay. There may be others assigned, but I got the sense it was just him. Is that uncommon, or do they use?
Well, you know, I'm not really sure, because in the Senate, the appropriations meets always as a whole committee, and so we do three-person subcommittees.
Right.
But the House is automatically divided up into the several subcommittees, so when they further divide, they might just do it with one. I don't really know the answer to that.
A question I can ask Roscoe, but I got the sense it was just him that was kind of formulating his thoughts to go back to his the existing subcommittee.
And I also have weights and measures information we can discuss now, if you choose.
Yeah, we can.
And are there any other subjects that we're still trying to piece together before we meet with them?
I don't think so. I think we answered the question about the pipeline stuff. We
I think it's
the weights and measures in the IT.
Run some weights and measures stuff by the two of you whenever you're ready.
Give Steve the first bite at the apple here.
Hot off the press.
Thanks, Steve.
Would my colleagues support a PSC directive that we use 16 font going forward?
Big fan of 16 font, right here.
And you don't have cool glasses.
They're fine up close, but I can't see long enough. Your time is coming.
Okay, right. So the first two chunks are basically just straightforward data, like the FTEs and the equipment. I think what we want to focus on is what we want to say is rationale, right, Steve?
Correct.
Maybe just a quick peruse, though, of the servers. Is there going to be any debate on that at all? That's pretty cut and dried, right?
I would think so.
Okay.
I've been surprised in the past.
Do we have to quantify, like, what... Are they more concerned about footprint of the server or cost of the server? No idea. Okay. All right.
Well, and the argument we're making is, A, that we don't believe they'll save us any money and probably will cost us money, but the thrust of our testimony here is, or our
Julie
response
said
here is, on being able to do our job.
So you don't think there's much debate about the servers? Like Julie said, go right to the rationale. Makes sense then.
I think so.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am.
And Steve, does everyone have the same background understanding about, you know, who you've talked to, Lisa, all of that? We all know the same thing. Okay.
Do you have the exemption letter in here somewhere?
No.
Because I'm reading critically here, right? If I'm Roscoe, the first thing I'd say is that was thoroughly vetted in 2005. That would probably alienate me.
Because that's 8 years ago or 7 years ago, whatever it would be.
Well, maybe we should attach our request and the response from the Office of Management and Budget.
I don't know what your thoughts would be, Julie. Just a happy to glad there of...
Because...
You know, maybe that's where what has changed since 2005?
As far as this argument goes, virtually nothing. The same arguments are still as valid as they were then, if not more so.
What about wordsmithing it that way, that says that, you know, we have 2005, this is what happened, resulted in exemption. From our consideration, nothing has changed since then.
To some degree, I tried to allude to that. I didn't say it as specifically as you just did.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, you could just even add that at the end of that.
The one thing that might be good to mention,
this is good,
is that one thing that has changed in 8 years is we have 8 more years of evidence that a reasonable state IT system that does the job for almost all the agencies has their growth has not caught up to what the needs of the mine reclamation people are. And so as theirs grows, so does the mining. And so this will probably just always be the case, as far as the eye can see, that this will always be
a
power user.
Yep. And we continually push.
With unique needs. Goal. Yep.
Good point.
One thing about this whole handout here is most legislators aren't going to read it.
Yeah, it's too long.
You know, Roscoe might when he's preparing for a floor speech. But we need to either have a page with big font and, you know, six or eight bullet points, or we need to be able to just sit down and talk about this and in a 45-second discussion lay out the real highlights why consolidation is not going to help and it is going to cause some major problems.
I think the letter is great, but yeah.
I think there's like the under the rationale, I would envision just bullets. Get rid of the first two long paragraphs of kind of lead-in. And a lot of that is kind of covered in some of the bullets below anyway. So either bullet the fact that we were, you know, this was considered in 2005 and approved by OMB, that's a bullet, you know, and just make them all kind of bullets and reduce the length of them.
Or leave this text, but have another, you know, kind of a header kind of a thing with our main points that we're going to talk about. And committee members can have this for background and to prepare themselves. If someone comes up with some of the questions that are answered by various parts of this document, here's the information for them. But I think we need to be able to make our case more succinctly.
Yeah.
So do like an executive summary, like Julie brought out, put the 2005 exemption in here, and have this for detail. That would, the more the merrier, right? How long is the exemption? Is it like a one-page letter?
Permanent.
Yes.
It's a one-page. So maybe and I believe our request is maybe a page and a half.
Well, then maybe you do like Julie said, you pull out the key points, and then you go right to the exemption, and at the bottom of the bullet points you say, we believe the conditions for the exemption in 2005 still exist, and we have 8 years to prove it works. And then you show them the exemption, and you give them all this other stuff.
You could also just do the FTEs. In addition to that, do the FTEs and the equipment on one page, bullet point of the rationale on another page, attachment of the exemption, and then you've got it. And then you could have an executive summary on the whole thing that maybe just gives the highlights of the rationale.
Yeah. The how about this? I would be comfortable with you guys doing your magic and letting Commissioner Fedorchuk review it to make sure you're cool with what we're sending out, and then we call it good.
Sure.
I think that's what always gets challenging with three of us. We all get our great ideas. We give our general thoughts, and then you finish it up.
Sure.
Is that all right?
Yeah, absolutely. I like what you did the first time around, so.
Hey, anything I can push on? Better. All right. Anything else? Time frame.
Good question.
Tomorrow at noon?
How about end of business tomorrow?
All right. Tomorrow's Thursday. Fair enough. So what I'll do is get on Mr. Straley's schedule for next week early, which won't work because I'll be at NARUC.
Another option would be for me to spend an hour and be done with it. And get it to you for review.
That would be fine with me, too.
You send it to me like
we
this.
We should try and, if possible...
Sooner than later.
...deal with Representative Straley this week.
Yeah. If you send me these...
You have that Word document.
Okay,
here,
so
email
I'll
right
just...
Now.
I mean, I'll cut like crazy and edit it up and then get it back to you guys this afternoon. I can do that after our deal.
Yep.
Whatever you say, we'll be fine. I'll be fine.
More cutting and less pasting.
Yes.
But I would definitely save this because it is a useful
document. Yes, we'll create a new document.
Whoever wants to answer questions
when
we're not there to answer them.
Okay, so maybe then, based on our next discussion with weights and measures, we can wrap this up quicker than later. All right. Fair enough. So now the pressure's back on. Just like Scotty and the Enterprise, right? Okay, so does that conclude our discussion on IT?
Yes, and thank you.
All right, perfect. We'll move over to... Commissioner Christman's weights and measures.
I have four copies of a one-page document, so I'll hand two of them this way. Does anyone else want one? No, another young person did this, so. Smaller
16 font. 16 font is going to make people have to be very brief if they're going to stick to one page.
Two birds killed with that stone.
Okay. On the weights and measures, just for a refresher, the commission requested the four FTEs that currently exist. Three of them are full. We have three employees for four FTEs right now. The governor's budget cut us down to two and took away a lot of operating money that would be associated with the other two. I think our first recommendation needs to be the recommendation that the commission made in the first place, and that's that we have all four FTEs, we hire a fourth person and have operating money for them, and the program continue as it is, because that was our request in the first place. I think it's pretty unlikely that that would happen. Oh, and also remember there was the issue with the audit, saying that we should be charging enough to cover things. So first option is just what we requested. We've already requested it.
With an increase in the prices or not?
Well, we didn't request that, so. Second option, and this is this box that you see here, would be to keep our four employees. Well, I guess that's really for what it results in is about a $485,000 operating loss on those four people. If we had the four positions filled and dealt with the whole system as we currently do, that does not include the cost of Shelley's job. If we wanted to keep the four going and increase the cost to pay for it, Pat built a system, and we can just build that in. We can have that in minutes. But I don't think, from what I've seen in the committee, that they want to keep four people. So I didn't go further with it than that. But this is a comparative thing. This is just what the system would cost us now if we kept it full.
Let me ask the numbers. I'm missing the one and one equals two. For the four FTEs, it says totals $227,500. If we go to three FTEs, that price actually goes up a little bit. Why is that? Because they'd have to travel more or what? I can't remember that.
That's the travel increase we're requesting for next planning built in on the second scenario. So the cost per FTE is higher.
Why wouldn't that travel increase be in the first one too? It looks weird that three guys cost more than four guys.
Yeah.
Well, it does. The four,
Do we have to do the first one? I mean, are we really even going for that? It just makes it confusing, I think.
First one was supposed to be a picture of how it would be today, this biennium. The second scenario is if we went to three in the next biennium, what would you predict?
The key in the first one is the $485,000 operating loss. That's kind of what the situation we're in today.
Okay.
And so
there's no harm in just giving them a reminder of where we're at.
And no, except taking the box out. And
that's what we did ask for. We did ask for four.
It is, except for you never know what they're going to get wrapped around, and they might get totally off track on something like, why is this FTE cost?
My discussion with Roscoe in the hallway is he's sold on three. No matter what we give him, he's sold on three. If we give him rationale for four, he's sold on three. If we give him rationale for two, he's sold on three.
Yeah. So when I keep thinking of Representative Scarpel saying, give us a transition plan. That's what we'd like. What are your recommendations?
Well, we can fix this box up. We could put in the operating cost increase, if you like.
I just think they should be apples to apples. Whatever we put for the one block, we should put for the bottom block, so the numbers match up.
Okay. Okay.
But other than that, I mean, it makes the point clearly.
And so then that operating cost goes up quite a bit, because our operating cost increase is pretty dramatic. Yeah. So, jumping down to the second box, which I think is the key thing, and it would deal with a transition plan with three FTEs.
Yeah.
And here is the proposal, and you know, our previous discussion and what I kind of understood is I think the commission's wishes. If we go with three employees, keep two small scale people, which is what we currently have now, their salary and annual operating costs, we project at 92.5 times two of them for 2 years, the two of them cost us $370,000. The large scale person, because of the increase, the much heavier operating costs, alone costs $330,000. So the total cost of the program would be about $700,000. If we make the transition at this point to on large scales, because as you recall, in pretty much every type of population area and on every corner of the state, there seems to be the ability to get large scales tested by others. And so if we make this transition that our large-scale testing will become quality assurance only, and instead of covering half the state, he will cover the whole state, but they're all being tested by someone else. He's just going out doing quality assurance. I believe he can cover it. His costs actually go up maybe slightly because of the increased travel, but bottom line is he takes in no revenue because we can't charge people to test something that they just paid to have tested. So his revenue is zero. For the small scale people, I had previously talked about like $25 or $27. Josh caught an error we had made in calculating the costs before. So their cost does seem to be a little less. Not not counting Shelley's salary. They currently do about 4,500 devices, maybe 43, but right in that area. If we charge $23 per device, we would about cover their costs, assuming that by increase, and almost all these devices, over 90% of them are currently priced at 11. So if we slightly more than double our price, I expect we'll lose a few. So assuming that we still test 4,000 of them, this is gas pumps and small scales, at $23 a device, they would take in $368,000, and it should free up some time for them to do several hundred, maybe as much as 500 each quality assurance tests per year, where while they're on their route, so there'd be not significant additional travel costs for them, they would just go pick up a few tests of scales and gas pumps that someone else had tested recently. We have to figure out that timeline. Is that within 30 or 60 days or something like that of when it was previously tested? Sure. We'll get no revenue from that. But as you see, even just by doing the 4,000 tests, the two of them would bring in about $368,000 from our $700,000 of operating costs. We've cut the cost to the general fund of our weights and measures program by down to $332,000 from general fund. Right now, as seen on the top box, it's $485,000. If we figure in the higher travel costs, it'll probably be more like $600,000.
So their decision will be to give $332,000 to the PSC or give $500,000 to the PSC.
That is correct.
And then on that note, if we were to include admin costs, you'd change on the small scales 23 to 25?
That is correct. That would cover the portion of Shelley, of the cost of Shelley as an employee, that is apportioned to weights and measures. Now, keep in mind, some of her job isn't just testing, it's the quality assurance part of it. And so, I don't know, I think this would go a long way toward meeting the concerns of the auditors, I would think. And there's some estimating here, based on the fact that we don't know how much business we'll lose by doubling our prices. I think this goes far enough for the first biennium. As you talked about that they had asked for, it is a transition. And so I thought the 23 was sufficient for this year, knowing that it may need to be tweaked again in 2 years.
Did you give them this sheet with all the background data?
I think we'd want to walk through this one, though, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely.
Sit and visit with them. Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, just the way you just did now.
And do we have the market price? I'm sure they'll ask, how does $23 compare? And I know that's hard, but we should have some sort of...
We are sure it's cheap, but the fact is the companies that do these kinds of services are all over the board because, you know, some do mileage and some just would charge a flat price. But bottom line is they don't really advertise their price. It's something that, you know, they look at as an internal thing that we don't really know.
Shelley did some calling and got some.
We've got some base marks and some of it, like good.
We have
limited information.
Yeah,
we have.
We have what we have, just because I'm sure they'll ask.
But I do.
The other thing that's deceiving about that, though, is that we don't fix anything.
See, that's
and
the
so
right.
we look like we're real cheap. But in light of the fact that on those times when we go out and test something and it needs adjusting, and then so then they have to immediately go pay someone else to make
right.
that trip again and fix it, then, you know, when you factor that in, maybe we're not so cheap. But if we provide that someone else charges $39 for a gas pump and we're going to go to $23, it seems like we're so cheap, but, you know, maybe we're not.
We don't provide the same services.
I think that context is important, but I'd have it. Just have it so we can verbalize it. Because I think it looks like we didn't do our background if we don't have that information. I think we look lazy.
We have what we had, so we'll just bring it down.
Yeah, just so we have, like, we, you know, knowing, A, it's not apples to apples. B, they aren't really forthcoming with this information. This is what we can tell you about, you know, what the private sector is charging.
Are you comfortable with just discussing that with
yeah,
them?
Yeah, not having it in
documents
writing.
Documents laying around?
Because if they,
yep,
if someone wanted
sure.
to tear that apart, they could, because it's just phone calls with no statistical numbers whatsoever.
Right.
It's just
yep.
all just what you get over the phone.
But we did try and
yep.
to get that.
But the big point of the auditors was we weren't charging enough to cover the program. It didn't say we had to charge what the private sector
right.
did. We just charged what the program was.
And we can make that point,
shows
too.
That,
yeah.
So we can cover the cost of the...
But now, talk to the money guy. How comfortable are you that $332,000 will cover all the costs of weights and measures?
$332,000?
Isn't that what you're showing me in this bottom thing here?
The very bottom is a net loss.
What is it going to be in our budget for this? $368,000?
No, I don't have a copy in front of me. The sure.
Tell me what...
$700,000 will be the budgeted cost for the
okay.
program.
So
we would generate $368,000 in revenue for the second plan, which, again, none of it comes back to us. It goes right back into the general fund. So this is all general fund cost.
Okay, that was the card I wanted to make sure I understood. So if I get asked the question of how much will it cost with three inspectors?
$700,000.
Okay.
We don't worry about revenue.
And how much did we spend for four inspectors? How much do we have budgeted for four inspectors the last 2 years?
I think current budget is around $920,000 right now, this biennium.
Okay.
With the request going forward, it would jump up to about a little over $1.03 million if we were given the travel increase.
The travel increase.
But we'll fix this box.
Yeah, absolutely.
With the 13,
I think we just need
15
to make, yeah, I think make it a little clearer, though, of what is the actual, maybe took that $700,000 number and highlight it maybe more towards the bottom, what we're actually asking for. I don't want them to go back and say, their general fund cost is only $332,000. No, we need $700,000.
We'll change that to net cost to the general fund or something, so they know.
Put that $700,000 in the bottom somewhere, so it's the last number that they leave. I don't know how you'd do that, or reiterate it or something. But just so it's very clear that $700,000 is what we need for three people. And
I'll put it back more of an accounting format. We'll put revenue first, and okay. then expenses last, so we have.
Yep. Is that okay, Randy? Just so it makes it a little clearer.
It is, but if you're trying to get at that number for people, then.
How you want to do
we
it
probably need to highlight that Shelley's cost is about 60. Was it?
Allocated.
So really the cost of the program would be about 760.
Mm.
Okay.
Well, yeah.
But I think just mentioning that
all right.
there's that administrative part of it too, but
however you want to do it is fine.
We're getting more into quality service.
This is
so
really
I
good. I just want to make sure that I was clear, I guess, too. Okay, so the game, you guys pretty much have this done then, right? So as soon as...
We'll make the tweaks.
All right, we'll see if Roscoe's available later today or anytime tomorrow, and then we'll ask him if he wants to come up here. If he wants to come up here, we'll notice the meeting and have all three of us sit in on it with whoever. If he just wants it down and dirty, then we'll go talk to him.
I'd say tomorrow, probably, by the time because I have to redo the IT stuff, and everyone has to sign off on it, so.
Whatever you say is fine.
It might be.
Well, let's see what his schedule is, but yeah, I get your point. Okay. All righty. So is that the last of our legislative questions as far as we know it today at this time?
Alana asked to sit out because she's working on two bills that are potentially pretty controversial.
In terms of involvement on 1147, that's the siting, the changes to the siting laws. In terms of an update to you guys, Alana has an engrossed bill with the amendments.
Is that the one that we said in the very first time downstairs?
Yeah. Okay. Yep. So this little working group has been meeting. We've got kind of sign off on a few of the – there's three major issues of difference. There's general consensus on two of them. And so she has an engrossed bill with changes that the working group will get together in the, again in the next couple of days. How much involvement – at what point do you guys want to be involved? Do you want to see the engrossed bill now? Do you want to wait till the committee has kind of signed off on it and say, here's what the industry folks, Alana, Pat, I have, you know, kind of think is the best approach. Everyone's supportive of this.
Can we just go through a quick update on Friday?
We can do whatever you guys like.
Just do it Friday, sure. If that's all right.
Yep, in our meeting, our legislative
meeting.
When
you say engrossed bill, did the committee take action on this already?
No.
Or this is just
they just wanted to see it, yeah, because it was too hard to look at otherwise with just all the amendments.
See, Alana joined us. Feel free to enter anything you'd like.
I have two alternatives ready to send out.
Okay.
To everybody, the whole stakeholder group.
But no, I'm fine with everybody pursuing. Just I thought whatever we have Friday,
okay,
we could just, as part of our legislative meeting, just kind of go through it. And then the two you're working on now?
Can we go back to this one, though, before we
absolutely
switch? So two of three issues are pretty much everyone agrees on.
I write a lot.
What's the distinction on the important one? On the
third one?
Disagreement.
Well, it's the whole intervener issue in the, you know, industry wants to have create this new mechanism to require people to register and become formal interveners, and we've been pretty, you know, Alana's done a great job of saying, you know, we have an intervener process now, and it matches what FERC does. That doesn't get at the issue that you guys are trying to get at, and that is they're saying what they want is to get people involved earlier. Well, creating this intervener status, we don't think really accomplishes that. So Alana's got some ideas. And so I think that's the big issue yet that the working group needs to kind of come to a resolution on.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to meet and give us any answers till they see these.
Yeah.
And so I do want to get them out, and it's possible that they'll want us to kind of talk about it before Friday so we can say something to the committee, but
that's fine.
We'll deal with it. I just want to get them out.
Well, because the intervener one, that is probably that was the biggest in the beginning. Mike, take off. Do you have a cell?
Yeah.
Okay, so I think we can go ahead and get those out.
Yes, I'm going to as soon as I get out of here now. I was just ready to do it. But there are four other bills, and I think they're all tomorrow morning. I sent two testimony out while you were meeting.
Deliberating.
And there's two more. They're all siting related. There's the two, I put them in the same email originally, that Lynn Helms is basically, he's going to try to kill one and fix one. And they don't really affect us, but they do because they're so confusing and so people don't know if they relate to us or not. And then there's the eminent domain basin electric bill that I heard yesterday afternoon. I will be asked to answer some questions on. I did draft some testimony yesterday, but I needed to read it after I was away from it for a while. That's the one where we had said, well, at least let's say what we think it means so that we glean if everybody's thinking something different. And what I ended up saying in that testimony was, I don't know that whatever they do with eminent domain affects the siting process at all. And the only way it might is if people are trying to use us to convince the landowner or use the eminent domain to convince the siting process. But that's kind of the same problem with or without this bill. So anyway, you'll read that shortly. I just have to go back through it. That's in the Senate tomorrow morning. And then the third bill in the House.
Is that an IBL bill?
No, Natural Resources, I believe.
Okay.
Yes, because Connie Triplett's going to be asking me questions. When I heard that, I thought that I maybe should be prepared to give a very high-level overview of the siting process. You know, need isn't an issue. We look at specific environmental-type things. There are three places where landowner issues are mentioned and point those out. And then, so that's the same as that 1407, which that's the one that's in siting that requires mediation of disputes for easements and then requires us to determine that they negotiated in good faith, which is a terrible provision. That's the one the AG wants our answer on, too, and that's the last one because it was the hardest one. I got to write that. I mean, I think you know the thoughts, but I have to write the words and get it to the AG's office. They also asked if we thought there was any fiscal impact because they got a request for a fiscal note. My first thought was that, and I said I had to talk to others. My first thought was no, because we have siting fees. I mean, we would use the fee. They might have a fiscal impact with the mediation service. So those two are coming soon.
So what do you need from us other than to respond quickly to your inquiries, and if you don't get to a certain point, you proceed forward, right?
Yeah, well, I think you might want to be thinking about whether you want a quick meeting on any of this. I'll get it out hopefully by early afternoon, and then if you need a quick meeting this afternoon, that's the only question for you.
To determine, if we were to determine whether someone negotiated in good faith, okay, so we can charge them for the siting of it to do it, but what's your initial reaction? How would we do that? Would we hire the mediation service because they have expertise in what's good faith, or
hire ag groups
to help us judge things, or what?
No, it's impossible to do. I mean, it's really impossible, and it's totally outside what you're supposed to be doing in siting. Now, again, you have the theory the legislature can give you whatever duties it wants to give you, but it's not appropriate to get into that, I don't think. And that's what we said in the wind farm one. It was, we'll say, the same rationale. But the other problem is it's the opposite of the concept of mediation. I mean, mediation is mediation, and approving is different. That's the opposite. So
is that more appropriately in, like, ag mediation, or is that something that just has to stay in the court system or the,
well,
wherever the ALJ falls in the world of,
for example,
things?
One of the Lynn Helm, the bill that Lynn Helms would work on that we did a little testimony on, that requires mediation for pipeline easements, but that's all it does. It just says you've got to mediate pipeline easement disputes with the North Dakota Mediation Service. And however that works, it works. It's not impacting siting. It only is up to the point of, do you have all your landowners lined up or not? That's a way you could do it that's acceptable. Okay? What they've done by putting it in siting and making it mandatory and imposing this commission decision, and I think there's an informal hearing or something in there. Really, that is the hardest one, which is why it's not done. It's just a giant can of worms. So let me try to verbalize this intelligently. I'll send it out as soon as I can.
Well, is there a downside to scheduling something today for like 3:30?
No,
and if
fine.
We don't need it, we don't need it?
That's fine.
I trust you implicitly doing what you're doing down there.
Yeah.
But it's probably good.
I have a meeting at 4.
Okay.
3 o'clock maybe then.
Or right after our 1:30 thing.
Or 4:30. I
have that KLJ deal at 1:30.
Maybe 3, if that works. Does that work?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Esther, can you send up for 3? And then what do we call this? Legislative update? I don't know.
Yeah, just legislative testimony or something. I mean,
I don't think it'll be too long. And just if we have any things that comes up or any recent involvements, because that next thing's at 8 o'clock the next morning.
There's 3 in one place and 1 over in the other place, and I have to try to find the times. One's at 8, but then there's 2 later, and they don't give you a time. And I'm hoping that the 9 o'clock at Senate is free. I think they're probably 8:30, and then 10 or something like that.
Did you have any thoughts for the three of us when we get people's concerns wanting us to testify or the other on how we should respond to them? Because I think we all three got the same email from somebody saying we should support the bill that we just talked about that doesn't make sense. And I guess my thought for my colleagues is that it gets to be a slippery slope sometimes. You don't want to not respond to the public. But by the same token, we're commissioners. So if we get something on a pending case, we can't respond to them. But you don't want them to think that they're not being heard. So oftentimes I would have Scott call them back and say, the commission has got your request. Here, please give me what you need. And if it got to the point where they weren't happy with Scott, then I'd sometimes ask legal to send them back a note just so they knew that we'd heard them, but yet we didn't compromise our positions in hearing these cases.
Well, if you're talking about you got contacts on this 1407, I think if you...
We're going to get more on more cases.
Yes.
Getting it just becomes a tough
thing to work with. The eminent domain parts of that, of course, would not be a pending case right now just because you don't do eminent domain, okay,
absolutely,
in citing. And it seems to me that you can say that you sympathize or you understand the reasoning or something like that. Like we are in 1147, we conclude that the objective is not terrible necessarily, but the wording, the devil's in the details of the wording, and that certain things in the wording may not be an appropriate function for the commission. You can do something like that. Now, if you have to decide, I guess, on your own if you really want to testify or not. But if you just need to get an answer back, showing them that you recognize they have a concern and maybe you even have some ideas about how they could reach that objective in a better way.
These are individual commissioner decisions that we
yes.
all have to make. But I always like to talk through the ramifications because I found myself in areas I didn't want to be in because I was overly aggressive talking to people early that found yourself in trouble later.
Yeah.
So it's...
Well, that's another reason to let me get this written, and then you can decide if this is commission testimony or not, if you've all been contacted.
Oh, no, I think what you're saying for me makes perfect sense, but it's just you want the public to know that you're responsive to them in these jobs. But you have to be careful what we're responding to, and there's been times when it's become very, very heated on some of these people that are in cases we've made decisions on. So, okay.
Okay.
So 3 o'clock it is for that?
Okay.
Did you have anything else update, Alana, while you're here?
No, I just came in because I heard.
Okay. Then I think we can move to scheduling. We have two items to schedule. Public input sessions for the tech hearings. You told me Mr. Diller's on a plane right now, right, Josh?
Not answering his phone.
All right. Well, Mike said in his email to all of us that he said late April time frame. So... I think right. Well, what was your question, Alana?
Whether we would do no. Is he scheduling the technical hearing? I didn't bring my agenda. Or just public?
Just the public input, because okay. He sent out an email to all of us saying, really public input sometime late April, tech hearings sometime, and he had August dates. He had August 27th as a date to start the tech hearings, and so what I wanted to do is schedule it with the three of us, and then we'll. Who would be best to close the loop back with Mike if one of you can, and just to. Yeah, you guys. So I guess given the guidance of public input hearings in April, the way we normally would do this, and please correct me if I'm wrong, Pat and Alana and anyone, is that we'll do the three commissioners, one of us will go to Minot, one will go to Grand Forks, one will go to Fargo, and then the company will present their case from some location over the Internet, and then each particular site will listen to the case, and then each site will have the public will ask questions about the case. And then we really don't have a role in the public input sessions other than to maybe be there to answer any PSC process questions, to hear the public, and actually just to show that we're concerned by coming to these public input sessions. The last rate case, we did them twice, not that that worked out better. We did them at noon, and we did them, 7 o'clock at night. I think that worked out really well because then you didn't have the argument that I have to take off work to come if you do it, in the afternoon. This way you let those that could make it in the evenings come in the evenings. Those that could make it during the day could come during the day. So I'd like to follow that guideline if that's okay. And Scott, you drive us out to these places, correct? Do we find the location or does the company find the location to do these? Scott Sheldon is now joining us.
What we did before was we worked through the IVAN system to set up rooms at usually at colleges or even high schools to do these. And we would set them up at, like you said, noon and 7 p.m. The commissioners basically decided on where they were going to be at in their lives to see which one might work out.
We don't have to decide that today. But as a thought, then it'd be North Dakota State, UND, and Minot State would come to mind quickly to do those. And, oh, of course, here in the commissioner room, that's right. Any questions about that so far?
Well, just on the timing of it.
Yeah.
Late April occurs to me, we're getting in the final days of the legislative session, and our budget, as well as all kinds of other bills that we have keen interest in, the key decisions could be being made. And, when things happen that we don't schedule and we have to be at,
right.
It's out of our control. But I really think we should avoid us scheduling things in the second half of April through whatever day the 80th legislative day is scheduled to be.
Well, and I think that's a good point, but I'll counter with the thought of all three of us don't have to be at these public input sessions. I think that these public input sessions, to me, we got to get scheduled sooner than later because we want the public to be able to be there as soon as possible to get their input as soon as possible. And so I don't think if we took a Monday night at 7 o'clock and a Tuesday at noon that we're all three supposed to be everywhere, and all of a sudden some testimony changes on Tuesday morning that one of us couldn't get back here to do it or not go, it would be my thought, is that I just pushed hard to get these things scheduled. And they're all important. I just wouldn't want to get into the May.
Where are you going?
At the colleges, probably.
Teleconference.
Right.
Well, sure, but I mean, we like to be at these locations. But the point is, absolutely, that if it turns out we're all three of us have to do these teleconferences from right here so we can be downstairs and testify on something, that's something we could do.
But it's important that it be before May.
I think it's important to get these scheduled as soon as possible.
Well, Mike indicated that if it was later than April, that he would have he wants to get public input to determine whether there are some other issues he needs to pursue.
Absolutely.
And so he thought that this was as late as he wanted to go. And so earlier is a possibility, but
sure. Like how much earlier do you think would
just any?
Earlier in April.
Okay, because you're on task for sure, Randy. Well, let's look at that then, because we won't be decided for sure today, but we're talking let's talk about that. We did Monday night and Tuesday noon Monday night and Tuesday noon before. We can do them the same day. Do you guys have any preference what days of the week it would be? Let's just pick some dates here. April 10th is a commission meeting, so we'll just try to, we could do like April 2nd or the 16th, somewhere around there. Do you have any conflicts that either one of you has for that? Because like I said, given the caveat that if you can't make it somewhere, then that's the way it is.
When is Easter? Is it in March? I'm just thinking for the public participation, too. You don't want to... Is it the 31st?
It's earlier this year, yeah, I think it is.
The Monday, the 1st, might be.
Okay.
The Monday after Easter. So I don't know if that affects the 2nd or not. But
we need three of these, or...
It's all simultaneous, so we'll all be hooked over the web. There'll be three locations plus us that'll tie into it. So, for example, if somebody from Fargo wants to have input, they'll go to NDSU. If somebody from Grand Forks, they go to UND. But we'll all be sharing the same big teleconference.
And they'll all be on the same night.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and time.
The same day.
Yep. Okay. Yep. And we can do it at noon on one day and 7 o'clock the same day, or we could do it at 7 o'clock the night before, stay overnight and wherever we're at and come back the next morning.
And so we ideally would each be at one of these.
Ideally, yeah.
So how about the 8th and 9th then?
Well, then we have a commission meeting on the 10th.
Or the 15th and 16th?
Yeah, I like those dates.
That's fine with me. Okay, so let's take the 15th at 7 o'clock and the 16th at noon. Does that sound reasonable?
Sure.
You know, I'm not thinking this is a big deal, but it just occurs to me. Do people gripe that they didn't have a chance to go on the 15th because that's when they're doing their taxes?
Then they could go on the 16th.
Yeah, they've got 3.5 other months than the night of the
15th. Relate to that.
Yeah. Why would they schedule it on the 15th of April?
For let's go 16th your purposes, and 17th. They don't take a lot of staff time. This is one thing that doesn't take a lot of staff time, like as far as meeting preparation. If you're out of town, I understand that affects your doing. But this is one thing, thankfully, except for you, that doesn't eat up a lot of prep time for anybody, I don't think.
Well, maybe the 15th is ideal. We won't go so late into the night because we have to leave people time to go and do their taxes.
All right, well, let's do that. Let's go with the 15th at 7, the 16th at noon. And then who's best to clarify? I guess can Pat and Alana, can you double-check with Mike that those work for him? And who talks to the company? Because I would offer up that if the 15th and 16th for some reason don't work for the company, that we could do the 16th and 17th too.
Okay.
And then is there any chance that we can get this these dates confirmed pretty quick so we could hold a special meeting to get these dates locked in?
I can email them when I get done here.
Because if we do the next meeting, we're already out into February, whatever. The sooner we set these dates in stone, the better.
Okay. Well, we're still looking at Minot, Fargo, and Bismarck.
Grand Forks.
Bismarck we just tie in. There's no Excel users around here. But this is a place where, like Randy said, if all three of us got to be here that day, we could all three join in from right here. And we might send staff to go out somewhere just to take the things.
That's why we have Bismarck.
Okay. The last item to schedule then is our infrastructure update meeting. What do you think? What should we call this?
Citing
case update.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Pat, how much time does it really take to prep? We would just go through this big spreadsheet and line by line, wouldn't we? Make sure Kara's got a chance to update it.
Right. I think this is Commissioner Fedorchik's call. I'm willing to spend as much time as you need to go through.
No, but how much time do you think it would take to make sure this is 100% updated, or is it there today?
Oh, there's only one thing that's missing from this chart, one case filing. And it's up to date otherwise.
Okay. But you don't need a lot of prep time to do this. It's just sit down and do it.
No, right? I think I just sit down and try to answer the questions you have.
Okay. Because it's a good discussion to go through.
Do we want to do it before? Let's see here.
I don't have much February 6th when we get back.
Yeah, and then we leave the next day for... I'm going to be kind of jammed. Let's put it off till the next week after that, if that's possible.
Whatever you want. The 11th week?
Yeah.
Okay, so... We've got a PI meeting at 1:30 on the 12th that morning. How about that morning of the 12th?
Sure.
So February 12th, 10 o'clock. Does that work for you, Randy?
It does.
Okay, Esther, if you could do that one. All right. Anything else for the good of the order?
Did we have a hearing in Tioga, or am I thinking of the one we have in Williston?
We definitely have one in Williston. Let's...
We talked about that one. The Tioga, we had a Hess case that's on file, and I got back to them and said there were some things that were missing in the application. I thought they were going to get that to us in time for me to have that notice on this meeting. And so we had picked a date based on that, but that didn't happen. So I think it was March. It was in March that the commission picked a date, maybe the 5th. That will not be the day.
And is that the one where the pipeline is already in the ground?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
It's an interesting sighting hearing.
So do you want to try to
get to experience all kinds of sighting hearings, right?
Yeah.
Do you want to pick a different date now, Patrick?
No, I don't know when they're going to make that filing, so I'm just going to wait.
All right, going once, going twice.
I do have just one question. Well, I do have the interviews scheduled for excellent. The attorney, the four attorneys. I guess I'd like some instruction from the commission how you want me to handle that in terms of your participation this go around? Because if you do come in, if there's more than two, then Esther would have to notice those interviews.
I think you go on the safe side. You notice them, and if we one of us is there or all three of us come in, we're covered.
All right.
Well, we did talk, though, about are they doing presentations?
They are doing presentations, yes.
Is it, like, in their interview? Like,
it would be during their interview time, right?
And there was some talk about us listening to the presentations.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
That would be valuable.
Right. We would notice it then, so I will give
they
Esther.
They wouldn't be open to the public, right? I mean, those aren't.
Yeah, once
everything we do,
they're going to be open to
but
the public.
But that's a personnel thing.
Yeah. It doesn't matter on that.
Executive session for interviews?
No.
Really?
No. It's all open, but.
So they're
when we talk about pay for our employees, they all listen online.
No, you don't have to broadcast it.
No, no. It just has to be noticed as an open
meeting.
Well,
they won't
know. Nobody's going to attend, but that's.
It would be good to have those on our calendars then so we don't put things on top of it.
I will.
If you were the fourth candidate being interviewed, you might want to come in and sit in on the first three.
Exactly.
Know what you got to beat.
Good points, but I think we'll be okay. We'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
Right.
Okay, good point.
Sounds good. I will notice or have
going once, going twice. Krista, you're the only one who hasn't talked to her.
And then put them on our calendar.
All right, we'll close the administration portion of our meeting.